Welcome to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari Shrike, the artist and creator behind Not Sorry Art. I'm so excited to talk art and creativity with you, so grab a drink, grab a snack, and let's dive in. I also wanted to say that today's episode is sponsored by my book. I have a book coming out. I'm so proud of this, guys. The links are already up. I'll have them in the show notes. But the book is called Modern Still Life, From Fruit Bowls to Disco Balls. It is my take on a step-by-step painting book. I am really excited about it. Not only does it have like motivational tips and tricks to keep you going in your practice, but it also has clear and beautiful and full color breakdowns of the step-by-step process in my paintings. So I could not be more excited about it. If you wanted to check it out, pre-order it. It would help me more than you even know. Hello, welcome back to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari. Thanks for being here. Today's episode is all about painting retreats. I'm going to answer a bunch of questions I asked on Instagram. Ask me about retreats. And y'all gave me lots of really great ideas. So the questions run the gamut from, what exactly is a retreat? How does it compare to, for example, a workshop? What are the caliber of students who can attend these retreats? You know, what skill level do I have to have? What's the age demographic? You know, what does the day-to-day look like? All the way to, a lot of people were really curious about like how to get into teaching retreats. How do you host your own? Like, do you have to sign up with a third party? And I'm excited to answer those questions. For a little bit of background, you know, I am an artist who's been painting for about a decade. I was able to attend school for art. And I have not only taken a bunch of workshops, I've taught many workshops. I have set up and taught an online art school, and I have done my fair share of painting retreats. I've done several international ones with a third party where I am hired on as the teacher. And I've also in the US hosted and completely created my own retreat myself. And so I'm able to speak to that aspect of it from both ends there. So if you want to hear more about retreats, you want to learn, maybe you want to host one in the future, maybe you want to take one and you don't know if you're a good candidate, I answer all of those questions and more in today's episode. So without further ado, let's just jump into the episode. Okay, I'm going to start by briefly kind of defining retreat versus workshop in there a little bit. A workshop generally is 5 days to 1 day, you know, 1 to 5 days ish. A lot of the ones I've taken are 3 to 4 days. And you are just paying for the instruction and the physical space where the instruction is being held. You're likely paying for your own meals. You're almost certainly paying for your own accommodations. A lot of times, venues that host workshops will have access to like local hospitality, so they can help coordinate it sometimes, but they're not taking care of all your needs in that way, generally speaking. Sometimes they'll provide coffee and snacks, but what you're really paying for is the teaching, the easels, the space. You provide your own supplies in both of these instances, and in retreats and in workshops, but you're paying for the instruction of the teacher ultimately. As opposed to retreats, which are a little bit of like, think of a vacation and a painting workshop had a baby together. You're paying not only for the education and of course the space to have the education in, just like a workshop, but you're also paying for meals. In the case of the ones that I work with UpTrek, every single meal is provided. So whether we're going off-site, you know, usually the retreats that I teach, we go off campus twice. The retreats are typically longer, although it's not as set in stone. Like you can have, for example, a 5-day workshop. You can have a 4-day retreat. The ones that I teach, my workshops are usually 3 days, 3 or 4 days. And then the retreats I teach are 7 full days. And so they're a little bit longer, but it really, again, depends on whichever one you sign up for and which company you're working with and all of that. So typically we go off campus twice. You know, the venues are absolutely stunning, but we will go to like a local market or a local beach, and they will even like bring pack lunches, or we'll go find a restaurant. So meals are all accounted for. Accommodations are all accounted for. So you have a room, and it can really depend. Usually whenever I teach a retreat, There are tiers of rooms. So, you know, anywhere from like a bunk room, the one that I did in down in Wimberley, so in Central Texas, had a bunk room. It was very like a nice bunk room. It wasn't like a hostel or anything like that, but it was a bunk room all the way up to sort of private little houses. So it really does run the gamut. It really does depend on the venue, but retreats do a pretty good job generally of advertising exactly the accommodations, because it is a very important and often determining factor when it comes to whether or not you're going to pursue a retreat or go on a retreat. A lot of people have needs and you want to see what you're signing up for. So again, it runs the gamut, but typically speaking, retreats are going to have more of a luxury element to it, and they're also going to be dramatically more accommodating. Just like workshops, you likely have to pay for your own supplies. Retreats accommodate a lot. So for the ones I teach, they have tables and easels and chairs and water buckets and things that are hard to travel with. If you're teaching with oil, they almost always have solvents. But you bring your own paints, you bring your own paintbrushes, paper, canvases, etc. That's pretty normal across the board. And in both cases, you pay for your own travel. So, you know, depending on where the retreat versus the workshop is, you're paying for that also. And so that's kind of how those two generally compare as far as like terms and general breakdown of what they are. So this brings me to my first question, which is like, what exactly does a retreat entail? What do they look like? Can you break down the schedule a little bit? And so this is pretty different depending on the retreat. You know, sometimes it's like a couple hours of intense painting in the morning and then the rest of the day is vacation. Because I will say the people who sign up for retreats kind of have different goals. Some people go to retreats really using it like a vacation, and then like the luxury of like maybe getting to watch someone paint, and maybe they dabble a little bit, but they're there to restore. They are busy. They have hard jobs. They're treating this as a vacation. And it's different by instructors. Some instructors are going to want to push you. They're going to require a little more consistency in their students. I very much show up and say, I'm going to honor where you're at. I'm going to teach. I'm going to provide all the structure in the world if you want to opt in. But if somebody like watched the demo and they're like, I'm going to go nap for the rest of the day, they could do that. That being said, this is generally what the breakdown looks like in my retreats. So we wake up and all have breakfast together. It's very sweet. You really do end up with like this lovely, you know how in like high school, you or like even in college, friendships were often just like, it's the people you sit to next to every day, where I feel like oftentimes in adult life, you have to be so intentional about making friends and like really like continue to connect. And it's maybe that's just me, but like what I always loved about high school was just like they're just familiar, like your buddies, you're geographically in the same spot, and so that frequency creates like a more natural feeling to me anyways, sense of friendship. In the retreats, you kind of get that too. Like we all kind of wake up, we have breakfast together, it's usually pretty chill, pretty quiet. Time zones are all over the place. And then I will go prepare my setup for my demo, and then there'll be a demo. And people usually bring notebooks, they take notes, I walk through my steps, what I'm doing, people ask me questions, it's great. First day, it always feels like a lot of info. I always tell people like you're gonna be like drinking from a water hose or like a fire hydrant sometimes. Even people who are skilled and have their own practice and are career artists, anytime you plug into someone else's approach, it's going to be a lot of information. So I just tell people, if you can cling on to a couple of key ideas and write down the basic steps, you're good. That's a victory. And then we'll have lunch, we'll have some chill time, and then we usually have 3-4 hours in the afternoon where everyone then goes and paints. At that point, I make the rounds. One thing I always like to carve out space for in my retreats is that everyone is different as far as like how much they want to do things shoulder to shoulder with everyone. So I have some students who are extroverts and who like would love to just have everyone in a classroom all surrounded next to each other. And then I have some students, typically kind of a lot, maybe half of the students are pretty introverted, and people are typically pretty sensitive about artwork. And I try to respect that. You know, people come to lessons, whether again, it's online art schools or workshops or retreats, with a lot of like art baggage. And I always try to respect that. People are often a little trepidatious, nervous, if you will, to share their artwork with everyone, you know, especially if like they have a controlled system at home when they paint, whether they're a hobby painter or otherwise, and then you are thrown into this whole different other style and approach, and all of a sudden you're making stuff that's, and you're jet lagged and you're tired, you're making stuff that's just not up to your normal standard. So I try to give everyone space to go and be as private as they want to be, especially on that first day, right? So I encourage people to just go and find a spot to paint at, and then I will make the rounds. I try really hard to sort of create a system, check out everyone equally, because one thing as a teacher is that some people are really good at being a squeaky wheel. Like they're really good at advocating for themselves, getting you, tracking you down. And then other people are very polite. I mean, not that people who advocate for themselves aren't polite, but they're very cautious of not wanting to impose themselves. And so I try really hard to try to take inventory of who is who and try to re-show up to the more introverted people and keep it all equal. Anyways, 4 hours, people are painting. They put something down. It's fantastic. We're excited. It's the first day. The stakes are low. We're having fun. And then we have dinner. And usually by dinner, everyone's really getting to kind of bond and hang out. And it's fun. It's really fun. I mean, if I'm going to end up saying that like 100 times. The next day is usually, I think we have like an outing or something. And we'll go to a market. We collect things for still life paintings. And we get to just get out and stretch our legs. It's really fun. They, of course, take care of travel. Usually we get like a big van or like a shuttle bus that takes us wherever we're going. And you know, when we were in Spain, we got to see Granada. In Morocco, we got to go to Tagazout and other markets. It's really fun. And then we will come back in the afternoon. Maybe we do some sketching. It's all very centered around art. But again, it's also vacation. So it's a little bit of both. You know, again, there are some students who come to these who are very adamant about like, I want to up level in my art skills. And so I teach to them. And then if you don't want to push yourself that hard, you can opt out and I'm here for you. I'm excited for you. I always tell people in the beginning, I give like a big spiel about like, this is y'all's time. I'm here to serve you. And that's kind of how that works. So students who are really dedicated to wanting to, you know, get all of the skill out, usually there's like lessons for them and we'll sketch and we'll sort of do art stuff in these cities. And then the next day is kind of another demo day, another workshop day in the afternoon. It's very similar to day one, but with like a different insight, different lesson. Usually it's like we're paying attention to value that day, and then rinse and repeat. And then we have another chill day. Sometimes the venues will host different things. Whenever I was in Morocco, we got to see them make Berber bread, which is the indigenous people of Morocco, and how they make bread. So you get to see cultural things usually hosted by the event. There's usually massages available because, again, this is very much a hybrid vacation / painting retreat. As a teacher, I always make sure that there's a good lesson plan. It's usually like plein air, still life and value, and then a big color push. By the last couple days, you know, some students are wanting to make multiple studies. Other students want to work on one painting. And I try to leave space for that, especially by the end of the week. The structure becomes a little looser and I can kind of meet people where they're at and what their own unique needs are. I have students who attend these who are like, I want to walk away with a good painting. I want to hang it in my bathroom. And so at that point, the last couple days, I'm really helping them zone in. I have other people who are just like, I just want to keep making studies and I'll help them. But it's very custom by the end of the week. I know everyone really well and I can kind of help push them individually. I always try to make time for one-on-ones. Again, I'm always careful and cognizant of the introverts. And so having that time to really reach out to them and make sure that their needs are being met is something that I think is really fun. And then also I can kind of comment and give feedback on their personal work because I know what everyone's making on the retreat isn't always like up to standard of what they make at home. And I try to respect that and respect their own artistry. And so the one-on-one time gives people a chance to be like, this is what I work on at home and this is where I'm trying to go and let's talk about it. And, you know, and I can do everything from just like cheer them on to give them feedback. But the one-on-one day usually happens at about day 3, 4, or 5, depending on the specific schedule. And that's always, I personally really love the one-on-one day. My voice by the end of the week is usually going and I start to get very sick of my own voice, but it's a very fun experience overall. And then usually by the end of the week, we have kind of like a goodbye ceremony, a big dinner. I always call it like, critique is always like a scary word. The critiques are, not only do I lay out ground rules and, you know, it's consensual, there is always good feedback, but it's never, I'm always really proud that like nobody is unkind. There's no competition. Everyone is pushing themselves, but there's awareness that everyone's on their own unique individual journey. And so the critiques are always really fun because it's like, it's a lot of people saying, you remind me of this artist or that artist, or I love the way you handle line. And a lot of times you can see what people's like, their other interests or their careers or occupations come through in their artwork. It's just, it's a fun experience overall. By the last couple days, We're all like buddies, and I'm proud to say that with retreats in particular, the groups stay together. Like one of the groups are going off to, I think, Arizona to do like another Airbnb get together because they're all like best friends. It's the coolest thing ever. And then there's usually like a mildly teary goodbye. And then the next morning we wake up and it's end of day 7 and we all go. So I know that's a blur. I realized halfway through talking about this, if I really wanted to go through the whole schedule, it would be a 50-minute podcast. So let's jump on to other questions. A frequently asked question was, what skill level do you have to have? And this is a good question. I appreciate this insight. The short answer is any and all skill levels are welcome. If you look at my artwork and who I am as a teacher and think that you could learn something from me, that's the top. That's whoever feels like that, then you're welcome on this trip. And the, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, you don't have to have any skill at all, technically. I mean, I have had multiple students show up on multiple retreats who have never picked up a paintbrush, or they did when they were like in fifth grade and they never did it again. I paint representational realism, but not everyone's necessarily going for that. I have the skills and tools to help get you where you need to go. And I really pride myself in being like, I'm not trying to get you to make a Sari painting. I'm trying to get you to make the best painting you can make. I actually am really proud of myself that I feel like I'm sometimes even a better teacher than I am an artist, which is like a real, we don't value teachers enough, but it's something I'm very proud of because it's, I could tell anyone how I would do a painting and how I would do it different. And sometimes I have students ask for that. If this was a Sari painting, what would you do? And I'll let them know if they ask it in that way. But for the most part, I'm asking them, where do you want to go? What do you want this to look like? And I'm working my butt off to get answers that help them. So for a new painter, we may have different goals and desires. We may be trying to simply make something that looks like an apple and try to get three-dimensionality. And that's great. And we'll help you with that. And then we may have someone else who's trying to come up with a certain distinct style for a new shift and a new body of work because they're a professional painter and they get featured in New American Paintings. And I literally have had that. So it's the whole gamut. The thing is, if you feel like if you went on one of these trips and you would expect yourself to make something perfect and amazing and you've never painted before, and that difference between your skill set and where you want to go would make you anxious, unhappy, or uncomfortable, then I would very much say that it may not be a good fit for you. If you are happy to show up, take the lesson the entire time you're trying to drink from a water hose, it's a lot of information, and I can come around and give you sort of guided steps of like, okay, well, what is step one? While I also go around to everyone else, if during those empty times where you've watched my demo, you've got your own little personalized set of what you're going to do, if you can jump in there and be like, I'm doing the best I can, let's see what I make, then any skill level is truly welcome. The students I've had who haven't painted before are people who are generally consider themselves creative. One person was a writer. Another person was just kind of like, I think she did photography. She was just a creative person, like hair, makeup, just you could tell very creative. And they did great because they know the creative process. They know that you take your instruction, you take what you have, you find a happy medium. And they did, a week is enough that you can see some pretty astounding progress in that week. And in all cases, they were really proud of themselves at the end of the week. Another question I got is, what is the age breakdown? Who's coming? This is a really good question. So the company I work with generally works with people who tend to be retirees. Like most of their instructors, kind of regardless of age for the most part, the people who like to attend these painting workshops are retirees, which makes sense, right? You know, you're retired, you have kind of the luxury of going wherever and whenever. And then there's a huge gulf. Gen Xers are apparently working their butt off in the work field, still working really, really hard. For me, it's a lot of millennials. I will say up through probably younger Gen Xers. I've had a couple of retirees. I've really had kind of a wide age range, but if you had to do like a median or an average, it would probably be pretty close to my age. I've had people who are recent high school graduates. It's like their graduation gift from their parents. They're artsy. They're going to school, for like physiology, And they want to take a painting course because they were really passionate about it in high school, and they want to keep it up as a hobby or side job, which is great. I always value those students. So it really runs the gamut. But there are a lot of people kind of in their 30s, I would say, is like the most probably beefiest group of the group, and which is always really fun. Women in their 20s, 30s. And I will say it's always fun and cohesive. The thing that I always really love about anytime I teach anything, but especially retreats, is, you know, you always wonder, like, what is the unifying factor? And since whenever I teach these, you know, the business I work with, part of the deal is like, you're the instructor. The other value that you're being paid for is your marketability. So they're not doing a ton of marketing. You are, which is fine. That's part of, you know, part of the job. Because of that, the people who are going to buy these retreats are people who are in the Sari ecosystem. And so, you know, I'm trying to toe a line where I don't sound too self-aggrandizing here, but it's a lot of people who share similar values, interests, you know, vibe, if you will, for lack of a better word. And so I'm certainly biased, but it's always a cool group of people. And I just end up finding the coolest people who show up. I don't know. We're still like, we all connected, and it's very fun. And yeah, that's what the age breakdown is. The skill breakdown, similar. A lot of people who are, you know, very sheepishly call themselves hobby painters, of course, then they start painting and they're actually fantastic. People always undervalue their own skill set. I have a lot of people who are professional artists, a lot of people who are professional creatives in some capacity, pattern designers, photographers, you know, UX designers, you know, all things that are very creative. And then, you know, they also majored in art, or they've painted all the while on the side, or they're self-taught and they just really like painting. And it's really a pretty wide gamut for both of those things. I had a couple of people ask about traveling with solvent and ask about mediums and materials. I'll briefly discuss this here. I love to teach in acrylic. I think acrylic is the best medium to learn in for a couple of reasons. One, generally safety. Solvent, you know, once you know it, solvent's nothing crazy to get around, but you cannot travel with it. It's very flammable. You would not travel on a plane with it. Of course, the company I work with, they work with a multitude of different instructors who teach anything from gouache to acrylic to oil, and they always supply solvents. But solvents can be irritating to the skin, to the lungs, if you're not kind of safe with it. And for that reason, I really like to have acrylics because it's water and acrylic. The other reason, and probably the much bigger reason, is because of how quick it dries. I think my personal philosophy, which I will not go into in this episode too much, when it comes to teaching, is learning to not lean into blending, which is like, if I can paint a visual picture here, if you have an apple, you have dark red on the outside where it's kind of pulling away from the light source. You have a vibrant, lighter red in the middle where it's fuller and closer to the viewer, even if it's just slightly. And then you have the highlight where the light is hitting it. It's a nice yellowy pale red. If you are blending, somebody might do the shadow, the highlight, and then just blend the middle to create that tone, that value that's in between. That is a crutch. That to me, and also not understanding how to correctly go up in value, by like most of the time students who don't will just use white to navigate up in value. To me, if I can tell they're aiming for realism and lifelike quality, which not everyone is, but if that's where you're going, those are the two biggest tells of a newbie painter. And I always really pride myself in getting pretty much all my students to not do those two things. And one of the ways is by really emphasizing mixing those distinct color variations, even if you're going from darkest to lightest. And by doing that, yes, is it more work in the moment? Of course. But it is the best, most important work, aside from maybe color mixing, which I guess it is part of. If you can get that down early, if you can get that as like your engine behind how you see the world and how you paint, even if you're doing realism, if you're not, then you are unstoppable. Like that is all the work. It's like being a runner and wanting to do everything but get the miles in, right? You know, so for that reason, I think acrylic is the superior medium to teach in. That's just me. I know, obviously. That being said, I've had oil painters. I've had people who paint in water-soluble oils. I've had a gouache painter. The thing for me, opaque and layerable. Opaque just means, does it cover completely, right? You know, using like a very thin acrylic, or use, obviously watercolor would not work with this style because we are intentionally layering as we go. But all of the other mediums would work. If you individually are comfortable sort of translating what you're doing into how I'm teaching, then you can bring whatever you want. So for example, you're an oil painter. You've only ever painted in oil. You want to learn to paint like me. I do paint in oil half the time. And you want to come on one of these retreats? You're more than welcome. The tricky thing is where I might layer kind of instantly. You would have to learn to do the same thing kind of a la prima. Or you would bring a fast dry solvent, something like a Galkid, and then like maybe a fast dry white, and have like a day between layers. If you could personally be okay with navigating that, if that doesn't bother you, it won't bother me. If it doesn't bother you, then bring whatever you'd like. I would say the easiest probably thing to bring that has the most parity with acrylics is maybe acrylic gouache. It effectively is kind of acrylic, but acrylic gouache and maybe gouache. Maybe if you're very good at knowing how to make it layerable and opaque, maybe regular gouache too. So that's what I would recommend. I would recommend staying away from color pencils, watercolor markers as your main painting medium. Obviously, feel free to bring those extra. People bring them all the time and doodle and play and sketch in their sketchbook with it. But if that's your main medium, be careful. Last question, I had someone ask about digital art. Yeah, again, if you wanted to bring Procreate and you knew how to translate everything I'm saying into digital, then I have no problem with it at all. If you are comfortable bridging that gap, if you can do that on your own and I could just instruct you kind of looking at what you're doing and helping you figure out light and color and form and value, then by all means, that you're more than welcome to bring whatever works best. Materials list, what am I bringing? This is another great question. With workshops, with online workshops, with retreats, you bring kind of your own medium. Again, save for some small things like the easel, things that are obviously hard to travel with, water buckets, water cleanup, etc. You're bringing your own brushes and your painting surfaces and your palettes and obviously your paints. What happens if you lose your supplies? This has definitely happened. I always bring enough. I bring enough for me, one other person, and just like a few extra things if people forget stuff. So if like half of my students forgot their supplies and people weren't really into sharing, we would be in trouble. I mean, we would have someone the first day from the venue go and get art supplies and, you know, I'd eat the cost and it would be no big deal. But yes, hopefully most people get their supplies. But yeah, you definitely need to bring your own supplies. How do you travel back with paintings? Great question. If it's acrylics, it all dries pretty quick. You can take palette paper and put it in between so that they don't stick, because yes, acrylic can sometimes get kind of gummy and stick. If you're bringing oil, you'll have to bring something specifically to travel with oil paints. I've had students bring that. If you are like confused, you know you're going on one of my retreats and you don't know what I'm talking about, message me. I'll send you a link to it. It's just like these plastic containers with like spacers in them. That's how I can explain it. Another question I have before I jump to the other side of this conversation, which is how do you get into teaching retreats, etc., is what clothes do I need to bring? What's the vibe, etc.? Of course, check geographically and seasonally where we're going. So, you know, I have taught in Morocco in the summer, and so it was very warm. Bring sunscreen. The venues always have sunscreen and bug spray, but, you know, probably to be careful, just bring your own. And check the weather forecast. Is it rainy, etc.? What is the vibe though? I get it. I get that. It depends. I have people show up who kind of are like in super, super casual, specifically the very young, like recent high school, college graduates really love their like chill sundresses and like sweats. So we always have some people who are kind of wearing like athleisure or like even just like sweatpants. I love it. It's very casual. Everyone's very cute in their own way. It's very endearing and sweet. So we have people there. And then I have had other people in the same trips, both extremes, who treat it like a fashion show. And I also love that. I think it's very cute. Like it's fun. One of the girls really leaned into this. Her career is in fashion, so it made sense. But she would come down every day and it was like a fashion show moment. Very cute, very sweet. So it's up to you. I work very hard to create a no judgment energy. I kind of probably dress kind of in the middle. I always enjoy getting to live out my art teacher dreams when I do these. So, you know, overalls that are all cuted up with jewelry and stuff. That's kind of the vibe, but it really doesn't matter. You know, we do kind of like the last night dress up a little, a very small amount. So maybe pack like one, whatever feels a little polished to you. But otherwise, you know, the vibe runs the gamut. Oh, and one more thing before I jump into how I taught it, I think this is a good segue anyways, is I also think that another way to think of these retreats is very much, I hesitate to use the word networking. What is the difference between creating friendships and networking? It becomes a little bit gray area. But what I will say is that in all of these groups, year after year, people find their friends. They find their community. You know, my first trip, there was this group of like girls who are all from Southern California who still get together and do art and talk and chat and are buddies. And, you know, my Morocco trip has a group of girls who are still buddies and hang out. And so, you know, it's the social is the other big, huge takeaway. You know, people really enjoy the time that having a retreat opens up for them. So a lot of people who take these retreats are typically mostly women or people who identify as not male. And so what ends up happening is that people who normally are kind of in charge of, you know, figuring out meals and putting so much creative labor, like lower C creative labor, if you know what I mean, into their lives and the lives of everyone around them, that kind of getting to just like be like one of the little ducklings in a row where like your meals are sort of, you know, curated for you and you just get to choose out of a buffet, or, you know, you get to have your outings planned and people take care of you and you just have to be here at this time and you have your class schedule planned out. Like being to be able to be a recipient of that opens you up to so much creative like brain power. That's always the big one takeaway. And the other big takeaway, getting back to like networking and community, is like the people that you meet up with. And so, you know, it's hard for me to like quantify exactly what that looks like. And obviously you can't guarantee it, you know, but generally like-minded people, we gravitate towards each other. It's such a fun, amazing thing that happens on these retreats. And by the last day, everyone's sharing numbers and book recommendations and podcast recommendations. And it really, it's hard for me to explain how much of a value that ends up packing into these trips, but I can't emphasize it enough. And, you know, it is truly to me the biggest like highlight of teaching these. Okay, so if I want to get into teaching retreats, what does that look like? How did I get into it? So I have always been very lucky and very much of the mindset that, you know, the trade-off for me being so diligent on social media, posting every single day and painting pretty much every single day and working a lot and really maintaining my presence on multiple platforms, is I put my energy into that with the hopes that it makes my email a magic portal. Okay, I know, don't really rise too much. It's not to say that I don't go after things and I'm not super intentional, but for me, that's always been a plan that works. I know that that is oozing with like luck and privilege. I'm so aware of that, but that is honestly how I sort of use my inbox and my presence. That's, for me, the hard work goes in one end and the good stuff pops out the other end for the most part. I will talk about an exception as I answer this question. All this to say, you know, it was in the pandemic. I had a little baby. Like, I remember my first FaceTime with the company I worked with. Like, I had a wriggly little, chunky little 8-month-old in my arms. I can still picture it perfectly. And they were proposing, hey, when, you know, when COVID regulations sort of hammer out, when we have better vaccines, would you want to work with us to do these retreats? And I remember, you know, as an artist, you get so many propositions, at least I do, and most of them are scams or people wanting to pay you an exposure. And so at first I was like, I don't know. You know, the venues they had were so beautiful. It almost felt too good to be true. I truly almost passed on the opportunity because I thought it was too good to be true in the sense of like the venues were so beautiful. But I guess what had happened with the company's called Uptrack, is they, you know, they are out of Europe. They were able to get these venues guaranteed and in such advance that it helped venue owners, because one of the things with venues is because things are so touch and go, having a certain amount of your schedule and your income guaranteed, especially in advance, is a really, really enticing to venue owners. And so that was how they were able to get sort of that part of the price point pushed down a bit. And they initially worked with all kinds of instructors from different, you know, chefs, yoga instructors, breathwork instructors, etc. And by far the happiest customers, the best experiences, the lowest, you know, unhappy customer rate was with artists, the easiest time marketing. I have thought about this a lot. I think that's just like, even if, you know, you're not into going on or teaching retreats, I think that's such an interesting thing. I always tell my like students and mentees when I tell them that artists are magic, I always bring up that point to them to kind of show them you know, artists are pretty special. Anyways, but so they switched their whole business model to just working with visual artists and catering to artists and really niching down. And they reached out to me right after they had sort of made that pivot. And so I remember having a lot of preliminary calls and my husband doing a ton of deep dives on like everyone to make sure it was legitimate and, you know, double, triple checking our contracts and everything. But once I realized that it was a real opportunity and there were guarantees and all kinds of great stuff, I went ahead and went for it. The way it works is I do pay for my plane ticket, but obviously they pay for my accommodations. And the rate works out to be a little bit higher than it is for my workshop rates. So for the most part, I will say I've done some workshops with buddies, you know, to serve a community that's really local where I will sometimes lower my prices a bit. To be a good steward of my community, but my general workshop price, it kind of reflects that labor that goes into it. I will also say it's very fun. It is also tremendously hard work in the sense that, you know, you're kind of, you know, the line between getting to hang out with people and enjoy conversation and working whenever I do these is a little bit of a thin line. It's always fun. I always say it kind of makes up for the fact that I'm so introverted the rest of the year that I kind of get it out during these retreats. But by the end of it, my voice is always hoarse and I need to sleep for about a week. So it's a lot. And so the compensation for me definitely wins out from that time away from my kids and my family and my work. And you guys know, if you follow me, I put out a ton of work. And so taking, you know, conceptually a week and a half to 2 weeks off is pretty huge for me. And so I will say it pays enough for me to pull away from that and have potential lost opportunities in that way. So anyways, that's how I sort of structure it out. That being said, how do you get into teaching workshops? This gets to some of my advice that I've always given people, which is a big philosophy I have in social media in general is like dress for the job you want. Metaphorically. And what I mean by that is you sort of have to, with social media especially, already be doing what you want to do, which I know sounds weird. It's like, well, I don't know if I'm in a position yet where I can pull this many people to pay for retreats, you know, for that to make sense. You can always start small and you can always start with projects that are just proof of concept projects. You know, this will tie back into retreats, but like one person I think does this really well is there's someone on, I believe, TikTok who does book covers for books, like remakes them. The book company's not paying for him. He's doing them just reimagined, but he's been able to build an audience doing that because he does a great job. Like so many artists, he's incredibly skilled and talented, and he's been able to leverage that and get book deals by doing book covers he's not actually being paid for. And so it's similarly like with retreats, like you would start small and work your way up. So remember, I will say teaching is its own skill set. You can be the best, most skilled, most talented painter in the world, but getting good at teaching is definitely its own skill set. And so, and honoring the fact that teaching is very much its own skill set, you know, how do you get the thing that you're doing to make sense in someone else's head? Like you often have to sort of say what you're doing and why you're doing it, rephrase why you're doing something, reframe it again, pull it back to their base of knowledge, and then re-say it again. And like that, it's through that kind of circular motion, really creative work, coming up with analogies, insights, reading books on teaching, figuring out 10 other ways that you can do exactly what you're doing. Through that labor, you can be good at teaching. So I believe that the recipe to being able to teach art in any capacity is not only working on improving your own skill set, being a lifelong student, most of us already do that, that's kind of a given, but also start teaching. And this can be teaching through social media. Here's a lesson, here's how I did it. People will comment, oh, can you explain more about that? Or what do you mean by this? And it's great because you're like, oh, I didn't know that wasn't very clear. Let me find another way to say that. And you can start practicing that. You're also telling your audience and potentially other people who see your work, I teach too. Because not everyone who makes art is a teacher. It's a misconception that goes both ways. And so by positioning yourself as someone who does both, you're also not only practicing that skill set, which is the most important part, but you're also branding yourself as someone who teaches as well. And then, of course, you can start by teaching, you know, whether you want to teach online, if it's easiest for you, if you're not near a city center, to teach, you know, through filming. Like if you're younger and like that feels more accessible to you, then you can do that. Or you can try to teach in person. I will say teaching online and teaching in person are, I would say, pretty distinct skill sets. A lot of overlap in knowledge, ton of difference in delivery. And so another thing you could do is find a city center, find a place where you can start pitching ideas for classes. So like, for example, at my local library, I can pitch, they have a, you know, a room where you can teach. I could pitch an idea. They don't have the setup to do like a full painting workshop, but I could do zines. You know, I could teach for older kids or, you know, adults or whatever it is, how to make zines, get the practice showing people how to do stuff, reading people's faces, learning how to intuit. Is that person getting it or is that person nodding because they don't want to take up your time? Getting good at that skill set. Then start seeing if you can sign up to teach actual painting workshops. Start with doing a couple of those. And then if you've very quickly gotten to be like, yeah, I'm good at this, I don't need to keep practicing, then you can start petitioning some of these companies. There's something called putting together a media kit, which is like, if you are sort of the mindset that you want to pitch yourself, which is what most people have to do, I get that, then you can put together a media kit to a company, something like an UpTrek, who does this. And you can say, here's my skill, what I've done, my paintings. And then I will say, depending on the third party you're working with, sometimes the third party does the marketing for you. And they'll say such that part of what they're doing is an ad spend. So they are going to put together the ads. Your name isn't going to be the thing that necessarily pulls people in. It might help, it might contribute, but it's not the thing that's doing the selling. If you don't have a huge following and you don't post a lot, you're just making your art and you teach and that's kind of your thing, you'll probably have to work with a company like that. If you have a little bit of an audience and let's say you've spent the last year getting better at teaching, then at that point you could go to a company that the business model really depends on you doing your own marketing, and you could sort of preposition them with your media kit. Finally, the last thing I'll say before I end this episode, because it is getting pretty long, is you could always host your own. This is not for the faint of heart. This feels like the easiest option. It is not. It is so much easier to plug into someone else's business infrastructure as the instructor than it is to do it on your own. But you could do that. I did it. I will just say my respect for people who work in event planning through the roof. I already had respect for it. I always. But now it's like if someone tells me they're in event planning, I think that I'm like, how do you do it? Like, can you tell me? Like, you're magical. I don't get it. It's such a skill set. So if you were to do something like that, you know, you would have to book the venue. So it's just like if you've ever planned a wedding, you know, you go to event venues, you ask, you know, what is the rate, when, you know, what times. You'd want to make sure you're aware of the schedule of like the time of year. Is this during a major holiday? If you're in Austin, is this during South by Southwest or ACL? You know, all of those things, picking out a date. And then you would want to make sure you have shuttles, you know, from the airport, that you would be able to build a page for it, sell it on there, you know, all of these things. I'm listing it not to be a deterrent, but just to kind of let you know what all you're doing. Of course, you'd have to do your own marketing. You'd have to accommodate people. One thing, anytime you work with people in that capacity, make sure that your business is protected from risk. So you would want to make sure you're an LLC by that point. And you would also want to have a lawyer work with you and make sure that you're compliant both with like ADA and all kinds of different things when you're working with the general public. There is a lot you want to be really cognizant of, especially in any kind of service aptitude. That is the part I would say most specifically of event planners that I'm like in the most awe of, is because you're having to be creative while balancing like really scary risk and liability. And I don't know about you guys, but like I have to coax my creativity out by being like, everything is safe, you're okay. And it's like, to do both is so hard. Anyways, so you would do your marketing and your web building and your promotional cycles after you figured out the cost of everything. And everything at this point is still estimates because you've only put down deposits for everything. It's a lot. It's just, if you ever want me to, I guess, go into detail about it, let me know. I have spent the last year making a lot of artist business material for my mentees. And so if that's something you guys would like, let me know and I'll see if I can put that together. All this to say, I would definitely recommend, unless you have access to a lot of capital and infrastructure and a certain amount of guarantee that people are going to sign up for this, try to plug into a third party. Research places that host workshops or retreats. Plug into their ecosystem, figure out the best way you can sort of help them market, or you can market it yourself. And of course, always work on your own teaching skills. Provide proof of concept to both your potential customers as well as potential people who might hire you to work as an instructor in a retreat setting. Hopefully that was helpful. That was a lot of information. Let me know if I forgot anything. I know there were a lot of questions. I try to answer the most commonly asked ones. All this to say, retreats are so fun. You're watching this as I'm currently teaching in France. I will also say that I have a few spots left in my Spain retreat, which is going to be at the very end of September through the first week of October of 2024. That is this year. I would love to have you on that retreat. I cannot emphasize how fun and enriching these are. Hopefully I answered your question if that's something you were interested in. But thanks again for anyone who left questions. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Take care, and as always, happy creating. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for being here. I wanted to also encourage you guys to leave a review. The feedback is incredibly helpful, and if you leave a review, I will read your handle or your name on the following week's episode. Take care, y'all, and happy creating.